for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. The next item of business is the planning director's comments.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any comments other than you'll notice the two items on our work session agenda, strategic zoning initiative. Mr. Newman has come back with some more information in regards to fees and on a residential plan, community zoning text amendment. Mr. Schimpf is here to give a presentation and to discuss his proposal with the commission. That's all I have for this time.
Okay. Now we have a public comment section. Anyone wishing to come forward, come forward to the microphone, state your name and address. Seeing no one coming forward, we will go to our work session. First item is strategic zone initiative. Mr. Newman.
Thank you. Good evening. We discussed last time the new Hanover County zoning initiative to reduce the fees and tax rates for properties that are interested in rezoning, normally from A1, which is agricultural, up to a business or industrial zoning. And what they would do then is that they would have decreased their tax assessment until such time as the use of the property changes, not in the zoning changes. So if you have an A1 property, you get it zoned to industrial, as long as you're still using it for agricultural purposes, agricultural level taxes would be levied on the property until such time as the industrial or business use comes along. They also reduce their fees for rezonings in certain areas. Including the county as is, we have a zoning fee of $1,000 plus a charge of $50 per acre. There is a land use taxation program, but if you change your zoning, you're taken out of that program, subject to rollback taxes plus interest. Industrial or business properties have a higher annual tax liability. Because of this, there's little incentive for owners of these types of A1 properties that could be useful for business or commercial to seek a zoning change to business or commercial. Furthermore, properties must be zoned commercial in order to be actively marketed by the state. And I was asked to look at the rezoning fees that we levy compared to surrounding counties. As you can see, Suffolk County is $1,000 plus $50 an acre. Louisa County is $1,000 plus $10 an acre. Albemarle County, it depends on the size. Properties that are less than 50 acres is approximately $2,500. Greater than 50 acres is just under $4,000. Buckingham and Cumberland both charge a flat fee of $550. And Goochland charges $1,500 plus $50 an acre. So I realize this is $450. That's actually just $50 for us. So we do $1,000 flat fee plus $50. Louisa does $1,000 flat fee plus $10. And Goochland does $1,500 plus $50. We had 15 rezonings from 2015 up to the current time, and we've taken approximately $26,000 with that. We talked to the Commissioner of Revenue, Jason, and I. He said he's willing to make taxation changes if the Planning Commission and the Board agree that this is something that the county would like to do. So he didn't have any comments when we talked to him off the cuff, so they seemed fine with it.
So it's roughly $1,700 per rezoning case. Is that the average?
If you had $1,000, 15 cases, we had two proffer amendments out of those 15, so it was
$1,748.86.
On here, you're showing $1,500 plus $450 an acre. Didn't the first slide show $15 plus $50 an acre?
Type.
We do 1,000 plus 50.
Okay.
That's just a typo here.
Okay. So looking at that, to me, we don't look like we're too far out of line with other counties. In our area.
It's $41 in Louisa, but less than Goochland.
I think the the gist of it is, do we want to go to a flat fee to make things more streamlined, or do we want to keep the fee at $1,000 plus $50 an acre? It looks like we're getting roughly $1,750 per rezoning case the past couple of years.
Is acres a determining factor of how much this cost you, or how much effort you have to make in the department? Because my guess would be no. So having that acreage number is a little silly, because it's not an indication of anything about the complexity of the work you do, right?
Some of the most complex cases have been a couple of acres.
Right. And our average cost is usually $1,700, and that's taken into account the acreages.
Yes, that's the total fees we've received for rezonings since 2015.
So if we went to something like a flat fee of, say, $1,500, that could affect small properties in a negative way, but affect larger properties in a large way. So in other words, if it was a 100-acre piece of property, that $50 per acre would add another $5,000 to it. If it's only a 5-acre piece, so.
Do you have a good or any good estimate of how much departmental time, what it costs to do a rezoning?
The way the process works, we get an application in. We have a pre-application meeting with the applicant. And from there, they file an application. So Stephanie's reviewing it to make sure everything's in place. The planner who's working on it makes sure that everything's in place. And then we send Mr. Miller out to put up a public hearing notice. So it's his time, his gas getting out there. So
I mean, if this were a business, which I get, government's not a business. Or if it is, it's a remarkably unprofitable business. But if this were a business, we would say, okay, this takes us, on average, 75 hours to do a rezoning, or 5 hours, or 5,000 hours. And a little bit, sounds like there's not a whole lot of cost, a little bit of gas, but the big cost is time.
I would say that there's no more review time in a rezoning than there is for a site plan that costs $550.
Mm-hmm. Well, the issue is going to be cost.
But we have the ads, yeah. So...
You have two sets of ads, and you have the, you know, there are expenses with having sure. public hearings and things like that. At the end of the day, a flat fee is probably the least defensible way to do it. And the way, if you're going to defend it, I think that the way to do that would be to get some study of what it actually costs to do that. Now, one of the things, just for example, one of the things that we have done is, in the case of telecommunications, we have a special provision for the special use permits, where we have a contractor that reviews the applications, because, you know, we don't have the expertise, and that fee is added on to whatever your application is, and it's paid to the county. The county pays the contractor and then reimbursed, so it's a straight pass-through. But that's a good example of what I'm talking about. How much does it cost?
And that was what I was trying to get at. It sounds like we're, I don't know for sure if we know. Like I said, if we're a business, we take the number of hours, figure out what our standard rate for employees is, and say, okay, $40 times 100 hours, this costs us $4,000 to process, plus all those fees. I have no idea what it is, but I'm just wondering if...
Yeah, the thing of it is, I think you've got to figure out the fees of the people in the planning department. You'd have to figure out the ad costs of doing that. You also would have to consider part of Mr. Payne's salary, because he is going to be in on a lot of this stuff, making judgment calls of whether it's by the law or not. You basically, part of our salary goes to actually making a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors. Part of their salary is, and then you've got all the secretaries and so forth like that. So I don't know whether we're really that far in the line or not.
I don't know either. And I would suggest that if you did analysis, you just analyze direct costs, not part of Mr. Payne's salary or part of what we get, or, you know, just analyze the staff hours that are spent, plus the direct costs, like the ads, like maybe some gasoline. I don't know about that. But, or maybe you have a good idea. You know what? If we charge $1,500, we'll be okay.
Well, and that's that, when I say it's harder to defend, it's harder to defend without having some basis information. Because I don't think the law requires that you say your fee will be $17.38. It's if we estimate that the typical rezoning is going to cost $1,200, that we could charge $1,200. Yours happens to be a simple one. You're paying $1,200 because that's what we set it at based on our general plan, so we don't go in the hole on it.
Yep.
I think if you're gonna fiddle with that number, you'd be well advised to get some
data.
Get some data.
Yeah.
And correct the typo.
Yes.
Do you think that I'm looking at it for one thing, I think it'd be kind of hard to analyze.
I don't think so.
Well, it would. There's some data that we could put together, but there's some guessing time, and but I think we could come up with a break-even cost based on whatever formula we came up with.
Yeah, it's not going to be precise, but I don't think it needs to be precise, as long as it's reasonably close and based on the actual expenditures.
One of our biggest expenses really is the ads. That's several hundred dollars. The base review fee for a site plan is $550, but that doesn't count the ads.
What happens if we run an ad and the person asking for the rezoning asks for a deferment, and then we got to run a new ad?
They pay for those costs.
They pay for the additional costs.
Typically require that if the applicant asks for a deferral, you require him to pay the additional. So it's his instance.
If the commissioner or board defers in that.
Now, is each ad the same price, or does it depend on the number of words and the size or whatever?
It's the size and the size it takes up in the paper.
So it could vary, but I think that's maybe overanalyzing too. Like Mr. Payne said, we don't have to know that this costs $1,172.88, but it'd be good to know that it cost us around $1,000 or around $1,500 or on average cost us $1,750, and then
we'd have to come up with a number for average staff review time per case.
Good thing is nobody could dispute your number, Jason.
And honestly, there's some cases where it seems to dominate staff time, and there's other cases where they're so open and shut that we don't spend nearly as much time on them. So it wildly varies.
So in other words, you don't think we in time and whatever in a year's time $13,000 worth of resources.
Easily.
It's because that fee is for the last 2 years at $26,224. So that would be $13,112.
I would say at least $1,000. But when you start calculating cost of staff time and unforeseen cost of deferrals and things like that.
It sounds to me like we're probably in the right ballpark.
I think so too. That's what I was looking at in comparing it with the other people also. That
well, the real question for this idea though is not what it costs or not what anybody else is doing, but do you want to subsidize it? Because that's what it really comes down to.
Yeah.
Because if you want to have the fees basically pay for the pay for, if you want to have the planning department pay for itself with respect to these rezonings, then, you know, you can generate some realistic figures. If you want to have numbers that will be attractive to people, and I think that's one of the ideas here, and you're going to have to reduce it, then the general fund is going to be subsidizing those applications.
On the other hand, if the county would wish to pursue this policy, we may get more applications for rezonings because people wouldn't have that immediate tax increase if you go from A1 to I1 until such time as the use is
there. I don't have any problem with that.
Taxes are different.
That's a different thing. We're talking about fees here. So, you know, I wouldn't have a problem at all about that because that makes a lot, to me, that makes a lot of sense. A person could have a rezoning to a possible, say, I-1 from A-1 or whatever, and only would be used for that if the right thing came along. So, I don't know.
And I think whether it's $1,000 or $2,500, that's, if somebody's rezoning, almost invariably they're upzoning. They're going to a higher, more intensive use. And $2,500 or even $5,000, which I'm not advocating, I want that on the record. But if it were $5,000, that is a very small percentage in the cost of a project when you're upzoning into, whether it's building a house, it's a very small percentage. Whether it's, and certainly if you're building a business, industrial or business commercial, it's a very small percentage. So I don't think these fees are going to prevent anybody from rezoning.
And it's just, it's the
taxes will prevent somebody from rezoning. That, I get. That's why I say if we're just talking about the fees, we should.
The second one is one that I think is, I would consider that to be straightforward and simple because there's express enabling legislation.
Number two?
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
Permitting
yeah.
that to be done. And it's also consistent with the general scheme of land use, where this is not the way it always works in practice, but the general concept is when you change the use, then you lose your land use qualification, which makes perfect sense because you're trying to keep the property in, you're giving an incentive to keep it in those, let me use the word, desirable uses. When you exit those desirable uses, that's when you pay the rollbacks. So it makes perfect sense to me as being consistent with the general scheme of things as well as the statute. Now, number three, I wouldn't say you can't do that, but that's going to be a different issue because the Constitution requires that you tax on the basis of fair market value. Now, if you're having land use, that's different because that's a preferential treatment, a statutory scheme on it. But if, for example, you had somebody who wasn't in land use and he went from, you know, let's say R1 to I2, and the value of his property immediately escalated tremendously, there might be limits on how much you could postpone that. But that's not the same as the land use issue.
Now, even if we had an A1 and we sort of zoned it for future I-1 use, they actually sold the property and it went to I-1, would that rollback taxes apply to that piece of property?
Let me see if I understood what you said. You got a piece of property that's zoned A-1.
Right.
And you rezone it to I-1.
But under this...
But this scheme is in force?
Yes.
The rollback applies when you change the use, not when you change the zone.
Okay.
Now it's either one.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, you got an A1 piece of property and you go and you subdivide it. So it stops being a cow pasture and becomes a subdivision. The rollback applies then. If you have your cow pasture and you rezone it from I-1 to, A1 to I-1, soon as the gavel falls on the motion to rezone, it the rollback applies. That's what you'd be changing.
Could that be like considered like a I can't think of the word I want to use now. Where you have a zone right over top of another zone.
An overlay?
Overlay. Could
no,
get
no, it wouldn't, because the way it is now, as soon as the zoning is changed at the instance of the landowner, the in a way that's not consistent with the land use tax concept, then it immediately occasions the rollback.
Could, but what I was getting really getting to, could, if we went to this type of thing, could we have it fixed so that the landowner could apply for an overlay of their property?
Well, you know, this goes back to what constitutes an overlay, and I've never understood what these people are talking about when they talk about an overlay that just sort of hangs in the air. That isn't the way zoning works. An overlay is, well, the most obvious overlay we have is floodplain. So when you have, your property can be zoned anything you want. It could be I-2, A-1, whatever. Then you put the overlay zoning for the floodplain. The overlay applies, and it applies right now.
Okay. I was just curious, yeah, trying to figure out how you would do that.
Yeah, I think I wouldn't recommend that you overthink this too much. I think it's pretty straightforward. You have property that's zoned for relatively non-intensive uses, classically A1, and your plan calls for the property, a lot of these properties, to be more intensively developed. They're more marketable if there's certainty in their development. That's what the developer wants, is certainty. And if he can come in and say, parcel X over here is zoned A1, but it's called for in a comprehensive plan to be something else that would suit me better, he's not going to like that property as well as he would a similar property where he can say, that property is a hog farm now, but it's zoned I-1, and that's what I would want to do, so I'll go ahead and market that. That's what this thing at the bottom is. You have this preferential marketing. You can't do it unless it's already zoned. Sure. So, and I think that makes perfect sense to me.
In other words, you'd zone it to I-1, but still be taxed at the use rate.
If it's in land use, the land use doesn't change. As long as the use doesn't change, you're still entitled to the preferential land use assessment. As soon as you make the change, then that changes you're no longer qualified for the land use.
Do we ever establish what the code says, or would we establish what constitutes the actual land use change? Is it application for a site development plan? Is it certificate of occupancy? I mean, that's just a curiosity.
It would be when they have their final approval.
Final approval for?
I'd have to go back and look at that, but it's going to be more than thinking about it. It would probably be... I guess it's going to be when they get their approvals, like a site plan or subdivision, whatever
right.
It might be.
So when they're actually taking action to develop the site as opposed to just beyond.
I would think that's right, at least in most cases, yes.
Do other places do this?
Statute's pretty new.
Yeah. Is there a way to see that type of statute? So that we figure out how they do it?
Oh, I think there's nothing magical about that.
Yeah.
The statute talks about changing the use.
Yeah. Well, you know, like I said earlier, I said that I don't have any problem with that, and I think it's probably a good idea because it makes the properties more marketable, especially in some areas where we probably want the property to be marketable. And people come in and say, well, this right here, we can be ready to go.
That's what the purpose of this is yeah, to help facilitate our economic development, make it easier for developers to know exactly which parcels are best suited to their needs, especially if we can get them zoned to commercial or industrial, and the current landowner only has to pay, say, ag taxes.
The essential concept here is that the one thing that's most important to a typical developer is certainty. So if he can look at Black Acre and say, I'm paying X dollars for Black Acre, and as soon as I buy it, I can send the architects in and the engineers and get it planned out and go forward with it, I know I can do it. What he doesn't like is I'm paying X dollars for Black Acre, and I got to fight through, you know, a year's worth of rezoning and special use permits, and I may or may not get it at the end of the day.
Well, like I'm thinking about the fact that Zions Crossroads, a lot of that is zoned A1, correct?
Correct.
And looking at this thing, the state could not market that because it's not zoned as commercial. And we would probably want the state to help us market that area especially. So I think that would be a great idea if we can figure out how to do it.
Well, it's simple. It's just a simple change to the ordinance based on the statutory language.
What did the rest of y'all think?
I think we definitely need to do it.
That makes sense. What I would suggest is that you get some more, unless you're satisfied that you have the information you want, get the staff to give you a better idea of how our fees relate to the actual cost. And if you're not satisfied you have that information, just task the staff preparing that information. And then recommend to the Board of Supervisors that they amend the land use statute accordingly.
I agree.
We can have that for you at the next meeting in September.
Thank you. The next item of the work session is Residential Plan Community Zoning Text Amendment. Mr. Robinson.
Added 7% on all their fees. So some fees like the application for a determination is $109. There are other, $529. But they did make an effort to index the actual cost, to cover the cost. So just a reference, it's been done, it could be looked at. And I do think that the tax issue is the real issue, not the fee issue. That I have clients in Zion's Crossroads who pay $40,000 a year in property tax on commercial land, which actually makes it, it devalues the land and makes it they want to get rid of it. And so there's an element of, if you want to encourage people to make efforts to develop commercial industrial properties, that, that sort of unknown of, do I rezone this and then pay taxes for 6-8 years at a high rate? That's a big deterrent, so my comments on that. On this, this text amendment relates to, will it change that the Planning Commission Board approved a couple months ago about the PUDs? It used to be PUDs were permitted in other zoning districts, and that was amended a couple months ago. And where now you have just the R3 in everywhere but Zion's Crossroads. And we were looking at the project out in the Rivanna area, and what realized in this is that 2.9 is the highest residential density that exists county side of the PUD. And that there would be instances in other places where going to a higher density would be appropriate. This is a couple of sections of code you're of course familiar with for your growth areas on the maps. So as it is, you've got four, maybe five in this area around Scottsville. I don't know if that's part of your growth area as well. But those areas will be limited to 2.9 units per acre. The comp plan, I think, addresses a lot of important elements in housing. We see this all over the place, but that there's sort of the lack of diversity in housing can be, you know, economic drag. And that you don't have a housing that works for a variety of people in the community, that it's difficult to attract employers for those areas. So it trickles through. The comprehensive plan addresses that pretty thoroughly. Talks about residential uses being multifamily, the growth areas, townhome, attached units would be are appropriate. Most of the, so the non-Zion areas are the neighborhood mixed use and neighborhood residential, which talks about ranges in density of 8 to 10 and 4 to 8 is a sort of development ranges in the comp plan. I think those are good ranges. In my experience, you know, 4 to 8 gets you some diversity of housing types. If you go to 2 to 3, it's just no incentive in single family development. So our text amendment was just crafted to basically capture, well, there's, like the comprehensive plan says 8 to 10 being a maximum in these sort of non-PUD zones, and there should be a way to get to that level. May not be appropriate for development, but it would be considered on a case-by-case basis. Part of that, of course, is an affordability component. You've got in the vision of a growth area, we create sort of its own, each area becomes its own town or sort of economic center. You need to have some variability in housing types and not just be single family that are all commuting to somewhere else to work. And across this, Proze actually has somewhat of this situation going on now. We have just a lot of single family development. But no one, there's jobs in Proze, but no one who works in Proze can afford to live in Proze. So it's a sort of hopscotch. Everyone lives over in the Waynesboro and drives to Proze, and everyone lives in Proze and drives into Charlottesville. And so it's not good planning. And that's the premise of a lot of these things with comprehensive plans. I think it's a well vetted and well done plan, so I don't want to say too much about that. But really, the issue becomes. Issue becomes the R3 your ordinance has done a job. It's not possible to create a development of that particular density. So some more discussion. Another one more example related to housing and zoning. So I did the Habitat project out six over by the CBS over there, the fire station, the gate that is. And, you know, I like what Habitat does. I think it's a good thing to try to break that out. But it's a 20 units. We have to clear 45 acres of the building. And that really is not necessary, but it was the only real route to make their project work. Because it's you really need to get to that, you know, 4 or 5 units an acre to build a kind of compact neighborhood that makes sense. So that's just another example of providing some affordability or housing for different groups for a higher density, I think is beneficial. So we propose an SUP element for density for a couple reasons. One is that if you were to go, let's say, into the current R3 order and say, we're going to allow higher density. You have all these little R3s out there that, you know, depending on how they were zoned, and those only have more density. You don't want to go take a plan that's already approved and suggest it might have more density if that's not appropriate for the application. The other benefit of the SUP is that it brought for the locality's position, it gives you a little leeway into what you think appropriate conditions are, right? If I come forward with a blanket rezone, let's say you allow R3 up to 10 units an acre, I have to profit, right, the conditions. And with a special use permit, the localities will say, well, in this particular instance, you've gone from, let's say, 2.9 to 5 units an acre, so we're concerned about traffic, we're going to be concerned about the utilities, and the Planning Commission Board to establish reasonable conditions on that. So in other places, City of Charlottesville, for example, has that as a pretty standard feature in most of the districts. It's simply you have a base density that's allowed by right, and then you have a special use permit for whatever's above that. That seems to work fairly well. I mean, that's the complexity of developers, but it creates a path where on a case-by-case basis, you can look at the project and determine if that's reasonable for higher density going on or not.
Could I ask a question?
Sure.
So the recent zoning change was made to only allow the PUD zoning in the Zions Crossroads area was from discussions from Poplar Ridge, Walker's Ridge, whatever, where people really felt like the PUD was not suitable for other areas of the county. I could see somebody, say this were to go through, I could see somebody coming and saying this is just a way to circumvent that community desire that we express, that we do not want that higher level. So how is this different than having the PUD available in Fork Union? So how is this different from what we had before we made the change?
Well, the PUD establishes, well, that's got a series of sort of tables and density allocations for certain areas that are permitted that I think imply that wherever you were in the county, if you were in the PUD, maybe it should be in that particular range. I think that under a special use permit process, it would be more like a lot, not like a growth area by growth area, but parcel by parcel consideration. Where if I have one parcel in, let's give the example of the, you know, Palmyra, right? I have one parcel there to do with the Poplar Ridge, which we were ultimately. But, you know, there was obviously a different opinion of the citizens and community. Was that a good spot for the higher density? Let's say somebody came and wanted to do a 5-acre PUD over by the high school somewhere. Would that necessarily be a bad development? Not necessarily. So there's kind of a case by, I think that project, that big project, brought out the fact that as your PUD ordinance is written, you can build a big development with that ordinance.
Let me ask you one question. You were talking about using Charlottesville a while ago as an example. And you've got speed limits in Charlottesville of 25 and 35, basically. Little parts of it's 45. But most of the stuff around here in these community areas is 45 and 55 mile an hour speed limits. Do we want high density with children next to a road where it's 55 miles an hour?
Well, Well, I think part of the R3 is you would never design all your houses right in front of them. I have an example I can pull up here of what that might look like. So, but in general, you could take that as part of that application. You can determine if transportation infrastructure is adequate for that additional level of development. So, I don't know if this is a speed limit issue so much, it's more of a capacity issue. And can the design accommodate, can we meet the right safety standards in design? That's going to vary on a case-by-case basis.
Mr. Chairman, let me make a comment about this. There's a baseline issue that Mr. Shimp's comments raise that I think is very topical, and that is we don't have anything other than low-density residential permitted. And the fundamental question for you and the board is whether the time has come to change that and to allow somewhere in the county higher density. Now, I suspect you're going to find that the answer is yes, that somewhere in the county we ought to have available higher density than 2.9, whether that's 4 or 10 or 25. I remember talking to the county attorney in Arlington County one time and talking about our high density being 15 units an acre in Albemarle, and he laughed and said, that's what we call low density. High density is not Levana high density.
We do have it in the Zions Crossroads planning area.
No, we don't. We have the opportunity to have it there. But we've already had one landowner that's proposing an amendment to the R4 district that calls for greater density. There's no reason you have to have an R3 type plan in order to have higher density. Now, if you're talking about 50 units an acre or 100 units an acre, that's different. But
right.
We're talking about 5 units or 6 units or something like that. Mr. Shimp's right. Those are still, at the end of the day, those are 1 and 2 family developments, maybe townhouses. So I think the fundamental issue is that you and ultimately the board need to make the determination whether you think we need the opportunity for higher density zoning anywhere in the county. Having it by special use permit is not a bad idea because it's a way you can consider the application on its own facts, not on a general abstract analysis. Frankly, I don't think this is a good idea the way it's proposed. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with the additional density because I think you're going to find the density. We need to have higher density available somewhere in the county. One of the obvious places I'm talking about is something that you decided last time, that is R4 in Columbia. Because if your maximum density is 2.9, there are probably not many lots in Columbia that would satisfy that.
That's true.
On the other hand, using creative work with utilities and other planning, you might very well come in with a small set of townhouses or apartment or something like that in a place like Columbia. Certainly a place like Lake Monticello. And probably Paul Meyer. I could imagine having very small lots, single family lots, two family lots, things like that, Paul Meyer. So my suggestion is that I think Mr. Shimp has raised an entirely legitimate issue. I wouldn't recommend doing it the way he's proposed, but the idea is doing it is a good one.
Now, at our last meeting, when Mr. Shimp couldn't be here, we discussed this somewhat, and we directed the planning department to look into both the comprehensive plan and the density issue separately in each community planning area to see what would be desirable. I agree that we probably need higher density in certain areas, but I do have problems in certain places. Like, for instance, we may not want somebody to have this high density on right on the road where it's 55 miles an hour. I mean, in our county now, we have places where we have to have 300-foot road frontage for properties, but other places we require 500 feet because of the traffic situation and so forth like that. So,
and those frontages were done largely in consideration of the character of the traffic. In other words, you got longer frontages where you had higher speeds and heavier traffic. As a matter of history, that's true.
I don't think each community planning area is the same. I don't think each road frontage is the same, and I think we need to work it out. I think that there is the need for higher density in certain areas and so forth like that. But at our last meeting, we did talk to them about trying to work the comprehensive plan and the other stuff together so it would be cohesive.
Right. I think that's what, you know, this said the fundamental question is here, the comprehensive plan envisions a higher density than what you have. Do you agree with that or not? I really do think those numbers make a lot of sense. You're not talking about 25 units an acre. You're talking about the most intense development you can get would be maybe a mixture of like apartments and single family or something like that. So I think that range makes a lot of sense. How you get to it, or as to how legally and code-wise should be done, or, you know, we propose to start a conversation. There's probably different ways to do it. And certainly in the ordinance, you could have a little simple table of, you know, each planning district, the maximum allowed by special use permit could vary. You might want lower, one or higher, sort of like the PUD had that.
I don't know that I'd support that. The special use permit process is by its nature flexible, and it should be. So that obviously what's appropriate in Zion Crossroads or even Rivanna is not necessarily what's going to be appropriate in Fork Union or Columbia or Scottsville or Palmyra.
But you could deal with that on whether
you can do that on a case-by-case basis.
And
the chairman's comment about taking account of, you know, you don't want 10-unit an acre townhouses fronting on Route 250, directly on 250, you can handle that with a special use permit.
So if there was an ag property, this would work. Tell me if this is how it would work. I would need to get that rezoned to R something. And then in concurrently with that, I guess, if this is what I want to do, I would also ask for a special use permit to have this increased density.
That's right.
It's typical, yeah.
If it was already residential, I could just go for the special use permit.
Yes. There's one particular property I won't mention that is zoned R4 that is being talked about for higher density development with a special use permit. And we haven't approved that. It hasn't come to the board yet. It hasn't come to you yet. But it could. And that's what I'm talking about when I say this problem really is not necessarily limited to these planned districts.
So there'll be plenty.
I don't want to get to the
outlaw
where nothing is done unless it's a planned district.
So in other words, say for instance, there's a property down on Route 6 in the Scottsville Community Planning District area that are R1. Most people don't realize that, but part of the stuff on both sides of the road are R1. So they could just come in for a special use permit.
Well, depending on how you do it. One thing about it is with our residential districts, the controlling factor on density, there's a cap on it, of course, but the controlling factor is utilities. Because if you go in R4 and you don't have public water and sewer, you're still going to be at a 2-acre density. Now, that's obviously one thing you can do is put in appropriate, hopefully when we get our water and sewer system up and running, that's what you would do. is you would apply, take your A1 land, rezone it to, let me just hypothesize, let's call it RX, which would allow higher density, and then a special use permit on top of that to increase the density yet more. You've already got the water and sewer there, so you could do it. So it wouldn't necessarily apply to all residential zones.
Yeah, I think practically you might do it like an R3 or R4. The thing is, right, is if you have the right design standards, you don't need to have a permit district or anything, because you can say, well, look, here's our standards, whether you have 3 units an acre or 6 units an acre, you follow our standards. You should get good design like that. So that is true. It would be, either way, I think on larger developments, like you had an R3, a mixed-use commercial residential component, I think that's what we envision, and that makes some sense.
R3 was always intended, I mean, let me just take you back to those thrilling days of yesteryear. R3 was intended for Lake Monticello. And it was, Lake Monticello beat the R3 zoning in terms of time, and nobody was ever interested in applying R3 zoning to Lake Monticello. But that's the kind of development that R3 was designed for. Could not have to be that big, of course, but it's something of substantial magnitude.
I think generally in this application, I guess what we would, if consensus, that we would like to keep it moving forward, maybe we would get comments on how it could be revised or, you know, technically adjusted moving forward.
Let me make a comment on that, because this has bothered me right along. I don't think you're obligated to consider this as a text amendment. I think the ideas here are worthy of your concern, worthy of your attention. But the statute says mandatory amendments to the zoning are only applicable to the applicant's property, except to the extent that it's initiated by you or by the Board of Supervisors. So I would consider this to be a conceptual suggestion that you give due credit for and due account of. But in some sense, I think this is too narrow. In some ways, it's, I don't like the wording of it particularly, but I think this is a bigger problem. I don't think you should have to go, if you think you need higher density, I think you'd be making a mistake to say this is only going to be if you had a full plan district, because I think there are places where you could have a conventional district where this would be perfectly appropriate, or higher density would be perfectly appropriate.
I think I'm still to the opinion is the fact that what we decided last week for the planning department to examine the comprehensive plan and the different areas and see what is suitable and then bring something back to us to take a look at. This one item by itself, I really can't see how that would apply to every area.
Well, I think broadly our perspective is if this is simply a change in the tax code, it can only apply to wherever the board approves special use permit. That's what I like about special use permit is that go on a case-by-case basis, that's the best way to do it. But probably right, if you're going to do it, it would be worth looking at amending maybe R4 as well, comprehensively. I don't disagree with that principle. We were looking at it as a situation that affects the property that we're looking at, though here's a way to address the situation, but broadly applies to other districts as well.
Well, like I said, I think that the planning department to look at the comprehensive plan and the zoning issues and see what they think about this, and then also work with Mr. Payne to come up with the right type of language for this. Anybody have any more comments?
No, I would agree that I think it's good that this issue's been brought to us, and I agree that we need more density. And it sounds like a process similar to what we're talking about here gives the community ample opportunity for input on every specific parcel, which is appropriate. But I really can't weigh in on the specific merits of this specific, because I don't have enough knowledge about it, this, what's been said or whatever, but I think it would be appropriate for the
I think Mr. Shimp is on the right path of bringing this to the Planning Commission's attention, but I think my recommendation would be that we do take into account everything in the comprehensive plan and our zoning ordinance to make sure we get it right.
Have one comprehensive solution as opposed to a solution here and then.
Correct. Well, then we'll be
peaceful. Somebody else comes with another
zoning issue districts and.
Do you understand where we are, Mr. Shimp?
Oh, yeah. I almost agree. And I think.
You know, we're glad that you brought this to our attention, too. You know, like I said, I agree with the other people, and I agree that we probably need some possibilities of our density, but I think we need to actually take a look at it and look at the comprehensive plan. Look at it all as a whole, you know.
Our brief study of it led us to where we were at, but we like to move forward as fast as we can. I understand that, and but I don't think we have a particular, it's not like we're rezoning a particular parcel, so I don't think you have to take an action particularly, but. And if there's more time, we need to go develop a comprehensive view of it. Makes sense to me.
Okay. I want to tell you, if you want to make any more comments, you only got about 3 minutes to go before we go into our regular session.
I think I'm good.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for bringing this to our attention.
Thank you.
We got about 3 minutes left. If anybody needs to take a short break or anything like that, go ahead, and we'll be reopening at 7 o'clock. And
8 minutes to game time.
I know.
No, I haven't. No.
Completely different.
Really?
Yeah, let's go back. I'm looking up some stuff. I can only go back like 5 years.
Wow. Well, what happened? You said the rework?
They did completely changed.
You know, I'd like to take a look at it. I just haven't.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Tell me your opinion the next time.
Okay. And you have an idea what you're looking for. So just an outside person, they really have a rough time.
Yep. I thought the other point was so much easier.
Mm-hmm.
I went back and told them that.
Yeah, the other one is pretty simple.
Yeah, I don't like the new one. You been doing all right?
Better.
Progressive.
Have a meeting at 7 o'clock.
Just not like it's funny that it's noted in there.
Now, 7 o'clock, I'll be calling to order the regular meeting of the August 8, 2017, Fluvanda County Planning Commission. Our first order of business will be a Pledge of Allegiance and then followed by a moment of silence. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. The next item is our director's report.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any actions to report as it pertains to the Board of Supervisors, the Board of Zoning Appeals. I just want to make a comment that we will have one public hearing scheduled for next month. We do have one application, and so we will have one public hearing next month. That's all I have to report.
The next item is our first of two public comment sections tonight. Anyone wanting to come forward and speak to any other item other than the public hearing, which at the public hearing you'll be able to speak, you will be limited to 3 minutes. And if you want to speak about something, come forward to the microphone and state your name and address. Seeing no one coming forward, we will move on to the minutes of the July 11th, 2017 meeting. Do I have any comments about the meeting from the work session or the regular session from last month? Do I have a motion about the minutes?
I make a motion to be approved.
Okay, I have a motion by Mr. Johnson for approval. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. I have a second. Mr. Zimmer, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, and Mr. Lagosino abstains because he was not here. So we have 4-0-1. Okay. The next item is a public hearing for ZMP 1702, Village Oaks Proffer Amendment. Brad Robinson will be presenting.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, and a little brief presentation for an application. We have proceeded to amend our proffer, this application, ZMP 1702. This is a request to remove proffer number 8 that was approved with the original rezoning application, ZMP 0402. That application was approved February 16, 2005 to rezone property from A1 to R3. And then just a little bit more history, there was a previous amendment request in 2010 to amend this same proffer along with proffer number 15 that previous request was denied in 2010. But then in 2013, there was a second request to amend proffer number 8. That request was approved. The location of the project within the county, you can see this red star here, is pretty much in close proximity to Lake Monticello. And then this site, everything here in the dashed red areas, but it was the property that was rezoned in 2005. It was formerly A1, it was rezoned to R3. And I'll note that this property here is excluded from the proffer amendment request. That property, since the property was rezoned, that property was approved to have an assisted living facility on it, so that's not part of the amendment request. And then just an aerial view. view to show that you can see pretty much the property in its current state is still undeveloped. Most of the site is still with it. I don't think the area reflects this, but there have been a couple of homes built on these lots here. Other than that, the site is not very well. And then this was the master plan that was approved with the 2005 rezoning. This is what was envisioned to be built on the property. So on the screen is existing proper 8, how it currently reads, and this is what was amended in 2013. The proper formally just said something simple on the lines of being a development for age 55 and older, and then in 2013 it was amended to expand to the wording that you see on the screen. So the proposed amendments would remove all of this text in its entirety. So to conclude, this proper amendment request would reduce the amount of private housing planned for persons 55 or older. Negro Village is the other community in the Ravina community planning area that is a age restricted development. Negro Village would become the only development. And as I mentioned earlier, there is an assisted living facility that was approved for one of the parcels in Village Oaks. So that assisted living facility is still proposed to be a part of that development. And the Planning Commission should consider how this request does or does not allow the goals and objectives of the comprehensive plan. So that concludes staff's presentation. There is a suggested motion on the screen, and the applicants, I believe the applicants are present this evening for additional questions. I can attempt to answer the questions you might have.
Wasn't the assisted living thing before this zoning? Because in one of the proffers, it talks about part of the turn lanes were to make sure of entrance to Monticello Village assisted living facility.
I'm not sure it's all around the same time frame. They both had 2004 applications.
Maybe I got some other questions probably need to ask the applicant, because my memory of this back in 2005 time frame, I wasn't a member of the Planning Commission at the time, but remembering about it, and then also we did an amendment, I think, in 2012 on this particular proffer here, and all of this was supposed to be designed so that people could
age in place
and be able to be in the 55 area and be able to move into residential assisted living and not leave the area.
Right.
And we actually, in 2012, amended proffer number 8 it softened it somewhat and to comply with HUD regulations. Okay.
I'm Charlie Armstrong with Southern Development. Keith Lancaster, who is someone we've also been corresponding with since, his regrets that he can't be here this evening. He has pneumonia. I'm glad he's home in bed. I hope he's better tomorrow. I'll answer the two questions first. Because they're very important. Assisted living parcel and facilities planned for that, nothing is supposed to change on that. This zoning amendment request has no effect on that whatsoever. It would still be planned for assisted living building. And
but wouldn't that change the fact of the way that was presented originally to allow people to age in place and be able to go from this, what proffer number 8 to 55 age restriction into the assisted living Wasn't that the original intent? And didn't we, in 2012, somewhat make that to comply with federal regulations?
2013.
Yeah, the short answer is yes. There's a lot more to it, but yes, the idea for the community when it was originally planned in 2005 was that it would be seniors only, and people could have independent living arrangements within their own homes, and then maybe age into assisted living facility situation.
And hadn't this also become before the Board of Supervisors in the past to actually take out number 8 before, and they denied that?
Not to remove it. No, it came out, it came before in order to soften it so that it would allow up to 20% of non-age restricted residents.
That was the 2010?
That was 2013.
No, we worked on that.
2013 was changed, actually.
I believe the 2010 was similar.
Because it was about 8, proffers 8 and 15, both.
Right, and 15 was about doing the turn lanes in a different order than was originally suggested. That's moved now, those are installed, those were built. The other number 8, I believe, was to amend number 8 in 2010 in much the same way it ended up being approved in 2013. I want to be clear with what we're proposing here. This is a change in the vision of the community here. There's no doubt about that. It was originally proposed in 2004 and approved in 2005 as a 55 and better only community. That was more than 12 years ago at this point. And we've been working on it since. Since then, have built the improvements to Route 618, turn lanes left and right at Crofton Plaza and at Lake Monticello 8. That was in 2012, so about 5 years ago, those were completed. And we developed the first 7 lots in Village Oaks to get things moving in there. Put some speculative homes up, and those have sold, but it took every bit of 5 years to sell 3 homes in this H Street community. Meanwhile, directly behind this is a subdivision called River Oaks. It's a by right subdivision that has no age restriction. It's 27 lots, and all 27 homes in there have been built in are occupied now in the same time frame where only 3 in Village Oaks are sold. The only real difference between those two locations is the age restriction. Other than that, they are stones throw visible from each other with the same entrance directly across from the main gate, same location. So it's forced us to admit that our original vision here is not working. We have some thoughts on why that is. The first and most important is that a lot of seniors now just are not seeking those age-restricted communities anymore. That was a trend that has come and now seems to be gone. You don't hear about the big planned communities for seniors only popping up in Florida and other places like you used to. Four Seasons in Greene County has really struggled. It's the same idea. Nagor, which we are currently building in, at its current pace, has another lots for 6 or more years of that same inventory for that same senior buyer. So the product and the availability is there. We're just not seeing the same demand that used to exist. What seniors are looking for, and we have experience working with this in other places, are communities that are designed for them but not restricted to a particular age group. They absolutely must have first floor living situations. They like universal design features where light switches, sinks, and things like that are at different heights that are more approachable for not just seniors, but really for everybody. And that's what draws seniors now to communities. It's designed for them. They like to see kids. They like to see a variety of, not general life, of course. This doesn't apply to everybody, but as general demographics. They like to have people who are in their 40s and and even young professionals that don't yet have kids. It's a different desire that we're seeing. We're seeing some of this in Spring Creek and Louisa, where a lot of people moving in there are retirees. There are no restrictions up there, but they're getting a lot of those retirees that could otherwise be here. And we've seen it some other places. We've done locally. We don't work anywhere in Charlottesville right there.
But doesn't this completely change what you presented to the Planning Commission and the Board of Supervisors back then and what they approved? Doesn't this, just by taking out this one proffer, doesn't this really change the whole concept?
It does, yes, and that's the point. That was 12 years ago, and a lot has happened around us and in people's desires in that time. And we've been trying to get this project moving that whole time. We didn't buy this to sit on it. We didn't buy it to build $1 million in improvements in 618 and the adjacent roads and then wait. We wanted to succeed. We wanted to move forward. We still think it's a great place for seniors, but we think we will have more success moving it forward and attracting those seniors if it can be designed for them but not restricted to a certain age class. But make no mistake, you're absolutely right. It's a change in the original concept. It's just not working the way it is.
Do you think the assisted living would ever be built?
I do, yeah. We've had interest in it. We have a current interested party in it. The interest is kind of soft until more gets done around it. People are kind of, the potential developers of those things are kind of waiting to see that the other infrastructure around them, the other rooftops around them, will be built. But yes, we have no intention of changing that, and we've been actively marketing it and looking for a user. Other things that aren't changing in addition to that assisted living facility are things that seniors want still. Commercial parcels that are proposed as part of this, commercial development, neighborhood scale, commercial is not changing. The amenity package for the community, including a community center and a pool, places for people to gather, that's not changing. The scope of the Homeowners Association services, which this is a really important one, which includes lawn maintenance, so that all the outdoor things are taken care of. We don't want to take care of that. That's included, that's not changing. And builders will continue to offer one-level living and one-level floor plans in here. That's all we've built so far, and that's what we will continue to build. We would like to have some option for some variety in there, but predominantly that's the product we would target. I want to speak briefly about why I think this is something Savannah should want too. Savannah's been struggling to get the growth that is coming from Savannah into the landing areas. It's been pretty consistently 60% this past year, 61% in the rural areas, which is almost the exact opposite of what the comprehensive plan wants. Comp plan wants 70% in the planning areas, 30% in the rural areas. The reason for that, I think, is that there just aren't lots in the planning areas. They're not available. You have plenty of rural cluster lots, you have plenty of family subdivision lots coming on. You just don't have lots in the planning areas, especially not lots like these with water and sewer that are ready to go. So in order to push that growth back to the planning areas and try to constrain it from rural areas, you have to have inventory. We don't. This would help with that. So I think those are important things. I think that makes this a good thing for Savannah too, in addition to us and the current delivery. And that's the last thing I want to say. We've spoken with all three of the current residents of Village Oaks. They're all people who bought homes from us with the expectation that this was a senior community. They knew it was age-restricted when they bought. That's what they were buying into. All three of them support this revised vision for the community. All three of them have letters of communication to our students, but all three of them would like to see this be approved so that it can move forward in a way that develops their neighborhood around them in a way that they'll enjoy. If y'all have any other questions, I'm always happy to answer them.
How many of the proffers have been completed?
to specific things, like Route 618, or water and sewer infrastructure are complete. All of the Crawford buffers and tree preservation areas have been preserved, and those buffer areas have been platted, so they will be perpetually preserved. The ones that are not completed are the assisted living facility at Crawford 3. Some of the trails through the preservation areas. Without users, it doesn't make sense to build trails yet. And the community center, the pool that hasn't been built yet, again, doesn't make sense for free. And the commercial spaces, those are not yet built. Same reason. All the other things, properties 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, back on the other page to number 1, 2, and 4. 5 and 6, those are all. We've done everything we can as far as properties and infrastructure improvements to get this thing going. Really looking at it. Invested a lot of money, a lot of effort. And I hope you agree as you drive by that it looks good. In the back of the place. We want to see that continue.
You were talking about the comprehensive plan. The comprehensive plan also talks about the aging population, which we do have an aging population, a lot of baby boomers and so forth like that. Some like me before the I recommend the unknown generation.
So you mentioned an issue that I hadn't actually thought of, so this could be good or bad for you. But so the current residents of the community, I would maybe posit that the we have some level of obligation to these folks to protect what they thought they were buying into, if that's the case. Are any of those folks here tonight that can attest to your statement that they're good with this? Not that I have any reason to doubt you, but I would also say we have an obligation to maybe be more certain of that.
I agree with you. I don't know if they're here. I don't know them personally.
Okay.
We feel an obligation to them as our buyers. We have a reputation of taking care of the people who buy homes from us, and we don't want anything to change that. Before coming to you, we went to them and asked this question. I have, if it helps, I have a copy of the emails about the correspondence from them. One is directly from them. Others are notes of conversations that people, our sales folks who talk to them, had with them. I'll be glad to share that.
When did the sales folks talk to them? How recently?
The last 45 days.
I think if you're going to consider those, it would be helpful to have those in the record.
You would.
Yeah.
Does anybody have any other questions for the applicant?
Okay.
Yes. While Mr. Zimmer is looking at the emails and so forth like that, he can pass them on to us and we can take a look at it. We can have a little discussion about this. I have concern for the fact that this completely changes the intent as it was brought to the Planning Commission and the Board of Supervisors originally. I do see in there, we talked about the comprehensive plan and we talked about the aging population and so forth like that and so forth. So I do have a major, and we did work with them back in 2012 or 2013 to revise Proffer 8, and we softened that proffer somewhat, and to make it comply with HUD regulations. We worked with the planning department and Mr. Payne to accomplish that. Bothers me also the fact that in 2010 they tried to either eliminate or change Proverbs 8 and 15. I tried to do some more research on that today, but I couldn't bring it up for me to look at. So I do have some concerns that it was presented for the fact that it was a big thing for the age in place part of the concept.
I share your concerns. I think it's also important that when we set in place a plan and we approve that plan, that we stick to it as much as possible, especially as we're trying to design our communities. And I appreciate the difficult situation that they're in, but it's also it could also be a negative precedent to allow that plan to change from that perspective.
I agree. I just don't feel like a lot of things in real estate have changed between when they started this project and now. And it's because everything got so bad, it's almost like they're getting a free redo, even though I'm sure it was quite expensive for them. But it's almost like they're getting a chance to redo with the benefit of 2020 hindsight by just looking over at the other properties that sold a lot quicker because they were not age restricted. I don't want to necessarily be so inflexible that, you know, we blocked them off just because the market got really, really bad and it didn't make sense to build anything. So they had to just sit on a property that they had a plan for and then had to change plans once the market shook out and tastes changed.
Sure, and it's difficult when you've had a slowdown like that to generate the enthusiasm among the real estate community to continue to promote it. But likewise, you know, some of the proffers and some of the amenities that they plan to add haven't been added. So if yeah. I was looking to buy into that place and saw the period of time that had passed with the low sales and with the lack of amenities, I'd be concerned. So it's a catch-22 for sure.
No.
But yeah. I think that the that's the risk that the developer takes. By the same token, the real question for Savannah County is, do we have a commitment to these types of communities and these types of plans, or are we, you know, opening a door that says you can do this now, but if things go wrong, you can change them? And
right.
I'm not saying
right.
I've decided one way or another. I'm just saying this is as Mr. Bibb pointed out, this is something to be concerned about and to talk about.
Right. But also doesn't really do anybody any good, certainly not the developer, but not Savannah County either, for it to sit there as it is. There is value. As the applicant mentioned, that there is value for our directing the growth to the growth areas as opposed to in the rural areas. And I kind of wonder, is there a middle ground here? Is there, as opposed to all 55 or no commitment to any of it being 55, is there a middle ground that would at least retain an outline of what the original rezoning was asked for and given, with allowing the developer some more flexibility, a percentage of the area to be, or percentage of the homes or something like that to be, to maintain the original restrictions as opposed to a free-for-all, I guess, which is a negative connotation way of saying it, and I don't mean to be insulting, but rather than remove the entire proffer, which is, you know, a proffer is something of value that the county has been given in consideration, you know, of looking at the value of the application in 2004 and 10 and 13, you know, proffer something of value. Is there a way that we can retain some of that value for the county of having this space, some spaces set aside for its original purpose? And I don't know if there is. I'm not in the real estate business. I tell Mr. Payne all the time, I'm just a dumb forester. But there seems to, maybe we can reach a middle ground. Maybe there is some middle ground that could be reached that, that would make this amenable to a greater group of people.
I think when you're looking at the 55 and older, it has a certain impact on the services in the county. So, well, you know, one of the things that would come to mind is rescue services and medical services. And then if you go away from the 55, then you have impact on schools and things like that. I do agree with Mr. Zimmer that if it just sits, it's not helping anybody. I'm wondering if there, first of all, is a way to look at some sort of way to satisfy both, but also to get a better understanding of the market and why it's not working. Because it could be, as Mr. O'Brien says, you know, if the amenities aren't there and it's been this long, why would I want to buy there? Even if I was looking for a 55 and over facility.
May I ask Mr. Payne a question? Would there be a way, and I'm not sure where I want to go on this, to modify this to where a certain amount would have to be 55 and older, and so you could have a mixed type of thing, uses, plus the fact that the rest of them would have to be single level type things, as I think is what they talked to Mr. Nichols about when they were talking about putting the application in.
Oh, sure. I think this is what Mr. Zimmer was talking about.
It is.
You take this paragraph number two and you change 80% to some other number or some quantitative expression.
Another important part of this, which is not being precluded by this change, but which is also not moving forward at the moment, when we did this in 2013, Mr. Chesser was the representative from the Board of Supervisors here, and he talked extensively about the community really, really wanting to move forward, mostly because of the assisted living facility. So I could see, you know, another reasonable compromise here, some greater commitment that that will happen, or that that will happen, or that only so much of the development will happen until that assisted living facility happens. Because I think that, you know, removing the age restrictions on the houses doesn't preclude people age 55 from moving in. Obviously, they can build whatever house they want. They can move in there. But not having the assisted living facility is something that was really felt really valuable when we've talked about this in the past. And if there were a way to move that up, make commitments that will be built in X amount of time or before more than 25%, I don't know, make up a number. Again, it's not my business. You know, I don't know this business. But their way to make a commitment on that, I think that would be a valuable thing also that would make this attractive to a lot more people. And the fact that more houses could be sold quicker that would allow that assisted living facility to be developed, that would be a win-win for everybody.
So in other words, you would say propose, Mr. Zimmer?
What's that?
Maybe you would propose, say, we would change that to, say, maybe 50% instead of 80%.
That was one. That's one possible outcome, okay. Or something related to the
and the fact of giving. See, the bad part about it is there was no time limit on any of this back in 2004, 2005.
But we can request that change.
I mean, you're right. We can add a
request it, but we can suggest. We're suggested, right?
Yeah, and I think the more I've thought about it, you know, going through this in my head here, I think the real asset to the community is much more so the assisted living facility, which is something that we need. And having no commitment to age 55 specifically for any lot doesn't preclude people age 55 from being there. Doesn't preclude homes being built to the standards that more elderly folks might like. So maybe that's a better thing to ask. I don't know. And I don't know about the feasibility of that. If that's
and then we have to think about what Mr. Lagansino said. There may be an impact on medical and stuff like that. But if we change this, it's going to be a big impact on the school system.
It could be.
And things of that nature. So,
but there's plenty. There's thousands of lots available in the county now where somebody can build a house and have three kids, all of them going to Flavanna schools. This doesn't change the ability for the schools to increase their enrollment if people wanted to move to Flavanna County. This doesn't impact that significantly.
Well, if 80% of it was people over 55, you're not going to have
that. Well, folks who have kids are just going to build in the rural area where there's plenty of lots that are things that are by right available already. So I'm not sure that's a huge consideration. But,
well, I think that, again, falls back to what was the original idea. And, you know, when it was first approved by the Planning Commission, by the board, the vision of, you know, age-restricted community with a assisted living facility with single-living homes to meet those kinds of demands and needs was, you know, sought after and attractive. And,
it was presented as age in place, mm-hmm. where people could mm-hmm. move into this 55 age and older community. And as they got older, wouldn't take care of themselves, they wouldn't have to leave the area that they'd become accustomed to. They wouldn't have to be away from their friends, but be able to move over into the assisted living part. And that was the age-in-place concept that was presented as part of this back at that time. Mm-hmm. I remember looking at a lot of this back in, I think, 2013, but I couldn't get to it today.
The other thing to look at is, you know, one Planning Commission meeting recently, we approved a commercial at the intersection of 53 and 618. You got to have people that are going to come to the area to support those businesses. So you got a commercial development with this, a commercial development there. If we don't have people, that those places don't get built either. So economic development doesn't happen.
So in other words, you're saying that people under 55 spend more money at these places than people over 55.
Well, I think the house is going
to... I think he's twisting.
You want to try to make sure the house gets built either way, whether it's 55 and older or not. There's going to be impact on services. It's either going to be over here or over here.
I'm just glad to see you recognized on both sides. But I do think that, you know, communities that have more of a balance are better. I mean, 80% is definitely a high number, even with one person is 55. Demographically speaking, certainly the predictions for how many people are going to age into that age group over the next 15, 20 years shouldn't make it very challenging for them to sell, say, at a 50 to 60% level from that standpoint, just because, especially with only one individual in the household. But I think by maintaining that restriction in place and by gaining a commitment to really building that assisted living facility, we're adding value to Flavanna, and we're also, you know, allowing the developer to grow his vision as they saw and still maintain integrity to what Flavanna initially thought they were going to get.
Maybe what I should do right now is open the public hearing part of this, and then we can come back to this if we hear things from the public. So at this time, we'll open the public hearing about this matter. Anyone wishing to speak about this matter, please come forward to the microphone, state your name and address.
Hi, I'm Steve Nichols, 135 Tulip Drive, and I'm not here as a staff member. I actually live in the 55 Walmart community in Mayor Village and have for 5 years. The several things that my wife and I have found out since we've lived there is it's a fantastic community, really great houses that meet our lifestyle and our neighbor's lifestyle, nice amenities, but I don't have anybody next door who can lift that heavy box to the top shelf or fix a window or do this. Now, many of us in the community hire others to come in and do some work, and there's lots of maintenance done in the facilities. But everybody in my neighborhood is a lot older than my wife and I, and we're in our 60s. And so if you, we've kind of changed our mind on all 55 and over communities from when we had when we first moved in. And so I really like the idea for my county to have a mix of folks in the area, as long as two things are available. A, the facility, the house can be built to meet my senior standards, in other words, the wide doorways and you know, thresholds between rooms. And that's clearly construction that's going on all around the Central Virginia area. And secondly, the maintenance of the facilities, the ground maintenance, the mowing and the mulching and the emptying of gutters and eaves and things like that. Those are really nice services to have, especially for seniors. And so I'm not advocating one or the other. I'm just telling you my experience on a senior facility. I do agree that the most important part from my perspective is to age in the area, but not necessarily age in place. If they built an assisted living facility at Namur Village, where I live, that'd be fantastic. But if they built it down at Village Oaks, that'd be fantastic too, because it's still within the neighborhood. If they built one someplace else in Savannah, that'd be fine too, as long as it's still in my neighborhood. I don't have to move to Charlottesville or to Goochland or to Louisa County to find a place. I can stay in my community, even if it's not right in my exact neighborhood. So that's our experience in the Namur Village sense of the 55 and over community. And then on the assisted living facility, even unless there's some property that they didn't hear about on the Village Oaks, there's no guarantee that the folks that live in Village Oaks, if they're seniors, are going to get a bed in the assisted living facility, because there'll be people from the lake will be taking beds, people from Fort Union will be taking beds. It, you know, it'll be coming from all over, because it'll be another good facility in our community. So there's no guarantee necessarily for the Village Oaks folks, if you make them all seniors, that they're going to get the slot in that facility. But anyway, that's my wife and I's experience in the senior living area. Thank you.
Anyone else wanting to come forward and speak on this matter? See no one else coming forward, we'll end the public hearing on this and go back to discussion of the Planning Commission. And maybe I could ask Mr. Payne a question. If we decided to go with, say, where number two is and change that to a different number or percentage, could we do that? But that's not what they're asking for.
You'd have to have the agreement of the applicant.
So I would be inclined to propose in a motion that we defer this and ask the applicant if they would consider a couple or both of these options we've talked about tonight. But
yeah, if we were to try to set a number, are we just setting up another request to try to change it? And the applicant knows what the market is and can come back with what they reasonably feel like they could do.
Could they send something to us that we could discuss before the actual application? Like a number of a percentage?
Well, I don't mean to be saying this to be negotiating with the applicant or anything. Let me just give you a hypothetical. Let's say the applicant says, "Would you have heard what the Planning Commission said? And it makes sense. And we could probably live with this if it said 40% instead of 80%. They can amend the proffer. The proffer right now is to eliminate this language. What they'd be doing is amending their proposed proffer to put it back in with a different number. They could do that. Otherwise, what you'd do is you would recommend to the board that be denied with the observation that a consensus of the commission was that if the proffer had remained at, and again, this is all hypothetical, 40%, 50%, 60%, that you would have recommended approval. You could do that. But you can't say, this is not like a special use permit where you could say, and conditions, where yeah, we're going to put, we're going to change this 80 to 60.
And I mean, that's another option. I'm usually of the mind that when we deny something but sort of give advice to the Board of Supervisors with that denial, we're telling them, you guys go ahead and debate all this and have people come. We're telling them to do our job for us, do the job of the Planning Commission. So I would be more on the side of a deferral. So what does it mean if the board then denies it? Can they not bring this back for some time frame?
It would be a year.
A year. Whereas a deferral, they can't. This doesn't move to the board until it goes.
Let's put it this way: I'm confident that Mr. Armstrong is listening to what you've said, and if you defer it, he may not give you anything you want. That's not the point. But he knows what your concerns are, and if he considers those concerns valid, he might come back and revise the property. He might come back and say, no, we want it to go forward to the board the way it is.
I think he's been sleeping over there. He hadn't been now.
Yeah. He could ask for us to defer it also.
Or deny it.
He could certainly do that.
Yeah.
Yes, come forward, please.
Not only about this, it takes a lot of minutes. I appreciate the discussion and the thoughts, because where your mind seemed to be headed with this is the same place we wanted to go. And having a proffer that memorializes that makes sense. I'd be hesitant. Mr. Payne probably knows fair housing law far better than I do, but I'm no lawyer either. I know one thing, that it's complex and it's very specific, and what is allowed to be in it is very tightly constrained to avoid violations of fair housing law for age discrimination. I still don't understand how this is not that, but apparently it's not. That's why we were here 3 years ago for this. So one thing I think we could and would probably like to do is proffer that a certain percentage of the houses would meet certain design standards, like first floor master bedrooms, like universal design elements, like wider doors and things like that. That accomplishes the same goal of designing things for that demographic. It makes it a little less appealing for the family who's got a couple kids that they want to put upstairs, and the more traditional family arrangement. That's something we could craft tonight if you like. I don't think it would be complicated language, or we'd be happy to come back. We've been doing this for a while, so months ago. I haven't heard anybody.
I think from our conversation that most people still think that there should be a certain percentage. Okay, that's number one. The other thing is, I noticed in your I don't know what it's the homeowners association or whatever contract, even with the changes, you would still have the lawn cutting and all of those things would still be taken care of.
Those are covenants that are recorded on the land that require the HOA to do certain things. Those are already part of the property.
Mr. Chairman, let me make a couple comments. Mr. Armstrong is right about the fair housing law, and I don't understand how this is constitutional either, but that's what the federal regulations say. And that's what you did in 2013, mm-hmm. was you revised it from a general statement about age restriction to these more specific ones, which were designed to track the federal regulations. I have frankly never been comfortable with the idea that the zoning administrator is going to enforce the age of people living in our housing. On the other hand, I'm not going to tell you that this is unlawful. I think it is lawful. At least nobody's successfully challenged it, to my knowledge. What I would suggest, though, is that
I think Mr. Armstrong's suggestion is one that certainly mirrors what Mr. Nichols said, and it might be worthwhile for Mr. Armstrong to go back and think how he would like to word this specifically and give you an opportunity to think about the things before it comes back. I think Mr. Zimmer's, therefore, I think Mr. Zimmer's suggestion in the first place was a good one.
That we defer it.
Defer and allow the developer to come in and take whatever action he thinks is appropriate. He wants to go forward with this, with the existing property, he has a perfect right to do that. If he wants to amend it to something else, it wouldn't be any problem, I don't think, if he wants to amend proffer number 8 to do these structural and form-based issues rather than the age, specific age base, or a mixture of the two. But I think it would be a lot easier to do that sitting at a desk than sitting in this room.
And also, that's not what's really before us today. So we'd really have to back at a different time.
I think it would be better to do that, do it more maturely, if it's not a big imposition on the developer to do that.
No, not at all. We'd be even with that. If I could run something by you just to get some general analysis of this is accomplishing what you're looking for, then we'd be glad to request the deferral and come back to the next meeting and talk about some more. If we were to, instead of deleting proper 8, to replace the existing proper 8 with something that says roughly at least 40% of the homes built in Village Oaks shall be designed with first floor bedroom and basic design elements such as minimum 3-foot exterior and interior doors to accommodate seniors. Is that going in the right direction?
Going in the right direction.
Yeah, that's a good start.
That's a start, but I'm not sure that...
It's really difficult for you all to get in this position because this is a proffer. It's supposed to be voluntary. You're not supposed to negotiate it. Right. So I understand Mr. Armstrong's position, and I sympathize with him, but I'm just not sure you're really in a position to be able to do that.
Okay. Thank you for your time, and we'll come back. We can request the referral. We'd love to work on it.
In other words, we have the applicant request a deferral, and we would vote on that. Do I have a motion to accept the applicant's request for a deferral?
Yes, you have a motion.
Okay. Mr. Gaines has a motion to accept the applicant's request for a deferral. Do I have a second?
Second.
Mr. Zimmer seconds it. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. 5-0.
Thank you.
Okay. The next item on the agenda tonight is a site development plan, SDP 1705, County Waste of Virginia, Brad Robinson.
This is a request for sketch plan approval to expand an existing parking area on property identified as tax map 579A. The property is 5.469 acres total size. The property is currently zoned I-1 and is located inside Crossroads planning area. And as you'll see on the zoning map, it's located within an area where there's adjacent I-1 and B-1 business. So this is the parcel here outlined in blue, and you can see it's within a larger area of industrial zoning there, and then the pink color on the screen is the adjacent business zoning that's in there. So you can see it's in an area of Zion Crossroads with some commercial or industrial activities. And then this is an arrow image of the property that shows what currently exists in the property. You see basically the property is currently developed to count towards one corner of the property. The proposed development would extend to So this is the entrance to the property from Route 250. And in the background there, you can see the existing office building slash shop building on the property. Then as you pull in further, this is the existing parking area and that fence line, which is what you saw on the screen. They will be expanding beyond that fence line towards the trees that you see there in the background. And same with this photograph, just another shot of that, pointing that towards the tree line to make the parking lot larger to accommodate more vehicles. And I will also note just beyond that tree line back in this area, there's a Vandal and Recycling, which is a larger, similar type operation that they sort of work hand in hand with. So this is the applicant's proposed sketch plan. So the fence line that I mentioned earlier is currently here, and it will be looking to expand and add more parking here. The parking, basically, they're expanding more in that area is going to primarily accommodate company trucks. They need more room for their company vehicles. And as you saw in the photograph, the property currently has a gravel parking area if you can surface all of that. And so cars, parking for cars, slash employees, whatnot, will be kind of contained in those areas. And then there's some trailer parking here. And this is the existing shop building that you saw earlier. So by the requirements of the zoning order, they're required to have 32 spaces and then up to a 40% increase over that. So a maximum of 45 spaces would be allowed on the site administratively. They're proposing to add 68 additional spaces to that 45 for a total of 113 spaces. The number 113 exceeds a 40% increase. So the Planning Commission, by Section 2226A(c)(1) of the zoning ordinance, is required to approve increases that exceed 40%. So the 113 would include a total of 55 car spaces, 45 truck spaces, 7 trailers, and 5 handicap spaces. And you may have seen in some of the material, there was some correspondence that talked about some variances they were interested in pursuing. And initially, when the application was submitted, there were some thoughts about pursuing variances. There was thought that the zoning administrator might be able to work with them on some of those. But after studying the ordinance more, basically determined that the Board of Zoning Appeals would have to approve their desired variances. So I understand that applicants basically going to just revise the final site plan to meet and comply with all of the ordinance requirements. And the additional spaces that you saw are going to be used for pervious surface, which is permitted as an option when you do increase over 4%. That's one of two options. So to conclude, again, this is a request to expand an existing parking area. The sketch plan appears to meet the requirements of the zoning ordinance. They will need to submit a final site plan after this step. The final site plan will need to comply with all the requirements of the zoning ordinance. And the staff recommends approval of site development plan 1705, subject to the 3 conditions of the staff report. This concludes my presentation. Suggested motion is on the screen. I can attempt to answer any questions.
Is the applicant here?
Yes.
I have a few questions for the applicant. So I think I've talked to you earlier today, so I've got questions from you. Does anybody have any more questions for Mr. Robinson?
I'll introduce to you Mrs. Chris Price from InSoul Incorporated.
Main question I had, ma'am, was I was concerned about some of these variances that was in the original discussions about this property. And are these variances going to be asked for, or are they moot at this point?
Whether they would be granted ministerial approval or whether we would need to approve applied for zoning variances and decided to adapt our site plan to conform with the ordinance.
I was wondering if you wanted to eliminate some trees and planting areas and so forth like that, and you wanted to eliminate handicap parking spaces, which possibility at some time you may have handicapped people working for you. You said there will be no pedestrian traffic on the property, but the workers are pedestrians when they get out of the vehicles, so... That was some concerns I had about that and so forth like that. So that's not part of something you're planning to do. None of these variances.
Correct.
Okay.
We did make one change to the site plan. It was in our preliminary sketch plan, but we had discussions back and forth about including it or not, and there's a scale. And I have a large drawing that shows the location of the scale. If you'd like to take a look at that, it's an important part of their future operations.
So it's different than what we're in our package?
Correct. So would you like to let me show you this? The scale, the use of the scale is for transfer station vehicles coming from the adjacent Vanderbilt property,
mm-hmm.
and they would be, as needed, it would be used as a backup scale. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's not part, the county waste doesn't bring waste into this property. They bring empty trucks leave in the morning, they drop their load at the transfer stations, they come back empty in the evening. So it would be as a backup to the Vanderland transfer station.
Does that affect the application at all, Mr. Payne?
Well, I think if there's a feature on that's supposed to be on plan, it ought to be on plan. I don't know whether the staff feels like they could simply condition this approval on adding that on the final plan. That may be one way to do it. But that... Clearly, something like a scale could affect traffic circulation.
This proposal was vetted at the technical review committee level. A change in feature of that sort, I feel, would need to be vetted as well.
So, in other words, you're saying it needs to go back to the technical review committee and come back to you with this change here?
That would be staff's preference.
Well, either that or if they want to approve without it, they could come back at a later time if they decided to put it back in.
Mr. Chair, the scale was on the preliminary site plan that was reviewed by the technical committee.
Is that what you presented to the planning department? It was not presented to the planning department, but it went before the technical review committee.
Correct.
Mr. Rogers?
Can you speak to the differences of the proposals?
And that was what was presented to the technical review committee.
Yes.
But it's different than what we got in our package.
Basically, it's just a square in this area here. It's located in this area.
Just subsurface, I mean, just above the surface. Sort of the, just a standard, you know, pavement, if you would, and kind of like what you do when you go to the facilities, the landfill facilities. And was traffic flow discussed in the technical review committee and all those kinds of things? I'm sure that was planned out. I mean, you've got big trucks, you can't really move around easily. But in terms of your overall design as to how your trucks would move, I mean, that's something.
We took into consideration traffic flow and distances between parking areas and roadways.
And you know that VDOT is requiring that you provide an interest analysis for the existing and proposed development at full build out and so forth like that. And you know you would be required to follow all VDOT recommendations. Mr. Stewart, do you think it needs to go back, or?
If the technical review committee has seen that proposal and is vetted, then I feel that discussing with Mr. Payne that if we could condition it based on.
You might want to add a condition, something like revision of the plan to show proposed scales. As presented to the technical review committee for review for the final site plan. Something like that would, I think, take care of it.
Or could we even say when it goes to the Board of Supervisors?
It's not going to the Board of Supervisors.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. You're right.
You were looking at Mr. O'Brien when you said that.
Did anybody have any more questions for the applicant?
Just out of curiosity more than anything else, what is the increase in growth of your business right now? How many trucks are you housing? And you're proposing housing 46 trucks. So is that a change, or is that projected change, or how's that growth planned?
It's a projected change. It's so they can accommodate future growth. Mm-hmm. They have currently 17 trucks, and they want to increase it to 46.
How fast would they predict to grow to that level?
I'm going to refer to Bob Griffin.
Sure.
My name is Bob Griffin. I'm manager with County Waste. To answer your question about the growth, we'd love it to be within a year.
Tomorrow.
It's probably more of a 2 to 5 year plan. We grow two ways, organically, customers call us, and of course through acquisition, and that's the biggest impact when purchase from back and disposal when their trucks came on site all at once. So.
And all of this will be paved when this goes through, because I was looking at those pictures there, and the parking area looked.
Okay. And how is it pervious? Pervious pavement?
Pervious pavement is
around
the car parking area, okay. And then the impervious where the trucks are.
Oh, okay.
And how many employees total are at the facility itself?
We've got plans to 55, and that includes 46 car spaces, 46 truck spaces, which relate, of course, to truck drivers. So that's what it was, the discussions about the amount of parking spaces and people and so on. Those trucks are there, so we'd be out of the 46, possibly 40. There's always spare trucks, repairing trucks, stuff like that.
So do you have certain hours of operation?
Hours of operation vary. There's a few trucks that leave early in the morning. We'll go into heavy commercial areas to avoid dense traffic. The bulk of our business is residential collection. We leave the shop, I'd say, anywhere between 5:30 and 6:30 in the morning, depending where we're going. People love to see us, but they don't love to see us in the neighborhood at 5 a.m. They want to see us sometime after 6 or 7, depending upon the community.
So in other words, all of the employees would not be coming in at the same time, but a majority of them would be coming in for this local pickup, not commercial type pickup. So
I'm sure they would come in and be in groups, and maybe see 5 to 10 coming for specific start times within a 15-minute period. They might be critical in there. And then they leave staggered at the same time. It's not like a 7-3 operation where we can then punch them in at one time and they all show up and then they all leave.
So we wouldn't have 46 vehicles going out on the road right in the one line?
We hope not.
Does anybody have any questions? Okay, thank you. Does anybody have any discussion about this? Myself, I don't see a real big problem with this. I was concerned about the variances when I was reading that, and I wanted to make sure that they were going to comply with what VDOT was going to require. I don't, because of the nature of this, I don't really see a big problem in increasing the parking because of the nature of the business. It's not like a parking lot of a business or something like that, that like a retail business or something. Okay. Anybody else have any questions? Any more discussions? Do I have a motion?
I move to approve SDP 1705, a sketch plan request to expand an existing parking area for vehicles and container storage with respect to 5.469 acres of Tax Map 5, Section 7, Parcel 9A, subject to the conditions listed in the staff report and... Is that it? It was the verbiage on
that?
The scale is presented at the technical review committee. And anything else? Nothing else?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, I've had a motion by Mr. Gaines. Do I have a second?
Second.
Have a second by Mr. Zimmer. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. Thank you. I think the last item on the agenda for tonight is the last of the two public comment sections. Anyone wishing to come forward to speak on any items in the county, you may come forward to the microphone, state your name and address, and you will be limited to 3 minutes.